AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. There are no reports yet of any injuries, but more than a few people in Northern California are a bit shaken after a strong earthquake hit before dawn near Napa.
It was a rolling quake. It started very much like a rolling sensation and just got progressively worse in terms of length. Not so much in terms of shaking, but it did shake.
Correspondent Rich Lieberman, who is some 40 miles away in Oakland, felt the earthquake, which hit around 3:20 local time this morning. Pictures were knocked off the walls. Things fell out of cabinets. Napa County Dispatch says it has had reports of some structural damage. In the Caribbean,
Tropical Depression 4 has been upgraded to Tropical Storm Cristobal.
Senior Hurricane Center specialist Stacy Stewart says the Bahamas likely to escape the strongest winds of the building storm.
Winds of near 45 miles per hour, mainly to the east of the center, which would keep it over open water. With lesser winds over the Bahamas.
A tropical storm warning is up for the southeast, central Bahamas, and the Turks and Caicos. It brought heavy rain to Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic. Cristobal could reach hurricane strength as early as Tuesday. A mass remembrance will be set today for James Foley, the New Hampshire journalist killed by Islamic State militants after being held in captivity for nearly 2 years. Thousands march in New York demanding justice in the cases of Eric Garner and Michael Brown.
71-year-old Juanita Valray is out here on Staten Island marching and says she hopes within her lifetime to see a change in the way police interact with the black community.
I know it's not going to stop, but I'm supporting what we stand for. This is ridiculous, and it's getting worse. And I'm a senior. I have great grands. I've been lucky so far.
She says every day she prays that her grandkids don't end up like Eric Garner or Michael Brown. Julie Walker, Staten Island, New York.
This is AP Radio News. The police chief of a small Texas town has been killed as he tried to make an arrest. Ross Simpson tells us more.
Bexar County Sheriff Susan Pomerleau says Elmendorf Police Chief Michael Pimentel was attempting to serve a 24-year-old man with an active misdemeanor warrant for graffiti.
The suspect fired on Chief Pimentel. He was hit several times and then was airlifted to University Hospital, where he was pronounced dead.
Sheriff Pomerleau says townspeople are stunned.
It's a very small town. Everybody knows each other. It's a very close-knit town, so the impact on this town has been devastating.
I'm Ross Simpson.
It's the final day of President Obama's summer vacation on Martha's Vineyard. Obama is due back at the White House this evening. He spent some 2 weeks with his family on the island off the Massachusetts coast. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me. Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes twice a day. They have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Did you know that birthday parties help build confidence in kids?
Yeah. Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Oh, totally. Did you know that friendly kids have more friends?
Everybody knows that.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the law offices of Offutt Corman. This is your host, Colin Callahan, with my co-host, Mark Cohen of Optifor. And we have a great lineup of guests today for you on our show. We have Therese Baker, who's the president of Abtech Professional Resources. Then we have Vikram Manikota, who is the president and CEO of Intelligent Automation, Inc. And then we have Shirley Clark, who's the CEO and executive director of the Women's Center, and followed up by Ashish Coate, who is the founder and CEO of TechnoMile. But first, it's my distinct pleasure to introduce you to Therese Baker, who's the president of Abtech Professional Resources.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Tell us, what is Abtech Professional Resources, Therese?
Abtech is a woman-owned, family-owned small business headquartered in Washington, D.C., and we do IT, technical, and professional administrative staffing nationwide for the federal government and the commercial sector.
And how large or small is that?
We are about 370 people in 42 states, and we're about 24 million.
Wow, that's very, very big. And how did you get a job with this company?
I found myself out of a job during the dot-bomb era around 2000, 2001, and my father-in-law said, come work for me, and I went, oh, no. And he said, please, it'll be great. I had a lot of business process experience. I had a lot of creation of forms and things like that, so I came in and actually did all that for him, put structure in place.
And now you're president.
I'm now president, yes.
And how long have you been president?
About 5 years.
What was most surprising when you stepped into that role?
I think initially I felt like I needed to know all the answers, and that's not the case. So it took me a while. You know, I need to depend on my staff and ask them their opinion and what they think, because they're pretty darn smart.
Surround yourself with smart people. And where were you born and raised?
I was born in Leesburg, Virginia, so I'm a local girl. And I was raised in Ashburn, Virginia.
And what were your mom and dad doing?
My father is a plumber, and my mother worked for IBM.
And also, you said in the green room that you had a small farm that you lived on.
We lived on a farm, so we had lots of chickens and cows and horses and a huge garden and, yes, everything.
And what was great as a kid growing up on a farm?
Initially, nothing, because it's hard work. But now it taught me that there are things you have to do every day that are dependent upon you getting them done. For example, the garden, we'd have to pull, you know, get the vegetables and pickle them and can them and get them in the cellar so that we had food for the winter. There's animals that need to be fed. So my father taught me that you're given a job, you do the job, you do it well, and then you get done.
So there's a certain work ethic that came away.
Absolutely.
With that. How does that show up in your day-to-day work today?
Same thing. I always think downstream. I always think about if I've got to get something done, whether it's a review or compliance or audit or even a hire, what's the impact down the road and when do I need to get it done and when do I follow up and make sure that it was done correctly?
And as a kid, did that show up in other ways besides being on the farm? Did you, were you kind of the one that organized things and ran things?
Pretty much. I'm the one at school who got people together. I'm the one who always said, come on, come on, you know, be here at this time, do this. We had lots of fun and parties, and I was always the organizer, and I was always the one who was organized.
Where do you think you learned that from?
I think being the oldest child, basically I had to keep track of everything behind me. So that's what I do now, keep everything, track of everything above me and everything behind me.
What did you learn from your dad that shows up in your day-to-day work?
My dad was a really great mentor. And again, when I was little, I didn't think that was the case. But looking back now, he again taught me my work ethic. I had a job where the employer was being inappropriate. And my dad told me to go in, resign. And if you're not back in 2 minutes, I'm coming in after you. Don't say anything about it. Just, and that's what I did. So he taught me, do your job, do it well. And make sure that people are ethical and take care of each other.
And how about your mom? What did you learn from your mom that shows up in your day-to-day leadership?
Well, I had a stepmom. Mm. So it was very hard for her to have a husband who already had a child. Mm-hmm. So she learned as well. And again, back then, you're kind of like, oh, this isn't, you know, she's not a very good person. But when I look back now, she taught me a lot as well. She taught me to get a job right out of high school. She's mm-hmm. the one who said, you get a job where you got to find a place to live. Mm-hmm. So, but she never let me work in fast food, which I found interesting. Mm-hmm. I always had office and administrative jobs, and I think that helped a lot. So I do thank her today.
So how old were you when your parents divorced?
I was about 3, 4, I guess.
3, 4. Mm-hmm. And so some of your brothers and sisters are...
Half.
Half.
Mm-hmm. Correct. I'm technically an only child, but I have three half-sisters and a half-brother.
And so you also said in the green room you got your first job coming out of high school.
Correct.
And how did you get that first job?
My stepmother said, find a job or find another place to live. So I canvassed Reston, and I put an application in to Unisys, and they accepted me.
So I'm curious. It was get a job or get out,
right.
And it wasn't go to school?
We couldn't afford it. My parents made too much money for a scholarship, and we didn't have enough money to send me to school. Hmm. Unisys, thankfully, and I always thank them for this, they paid for my education. So I got an associate's degree. It took mm-hmm. me about 8 years, but I graduated top of my class, and they paid for it, and I'm grateful.
Mm-hmm. And then you didn't go any further?
No, I'm done.
You're done. Okay. Okay, so just so it's clear, you can be the CEO of a large company and not have a graduated college with a 4-year degree.
Yes, sir. And I will say, though, I read a lot. I take a lot of just local courses. I go to local functions and things like that. And you've got to read. You got to stay up on things. I have a lot of newsletters I get, etc.
So how did you learn how to be a CEO?
On-the-job training. And my father-in-law will tell you, experience is an expensive teacher. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you do things right and sometimes you don't. But as long as you don't make the same mistake again, I think you're great.
Okay.
So the first job then was recruiting, and you moved mm-hmm. up through the recruiting ranks.
That's right. I was a corporate recruiter for Unisys for 8 years, mm-hmm. 9 years. And then I went to executive search for Paul Tittle, mm-hmm. great company. And then I did agency recruiting, and then I went to PSINet, who unfortunately is no longer with us. Mm-hmm. And I had a great career run there, and then I found myself out of a job, and mm-hmm. that's in 2000 when mm-hmm. my father-in-law said, come on board.
And the rest is history.
Yep.
How does having worked all aspects of the job for the all the jobs in the company, how does that help you as a leader?
It helps me because I tell my staff it may not be easy, but it's worth it. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of little tricks and tips I can give them to help them do their job better. Mm-hmm. And I think having the experience, they'll look at me and go, oh, okay, you've been there, done that. Mm-hmm. I should listen.
Give some credibility.
Yes.
Yeah, plus
yes.
your own knowledge. And you have a daughter, you said?
I do. She's uh-huh. 2. Uh-huh. She's so beautiful.
And she may be a little young for this, but how is being head of a company like a family?
Because you feel like you're responsible for them. You feel like you want to give them a great place to work. Mm-hmm. You want to give them a great opportunity. You want to make sure that they're learning. You don't want them to get stale. You know, what kind of job do they want, and how can I help them get that job? And we've had people come on board, and it's just not the right place. Mm-hmm. And we've made that decision, and they've gone elsewhere and have excelled. Mm-hmm. So I really think it just depends on if the industry is good for them or not. Mm-hmm. And helping them through that.
Where did you learn your ability to match people? Because there's a sense, not only did you tell us in the green room that that's a piece you like, but there's real value in a good match.
Absolutely.
How did you learn to assess people?
I think initially it's that you don't judge people. Mm-hmm. You know, you judge physical appearance, but you don't know until you've actually talked with them. So I let people talk. I'm mm-hmm. not a talker, even though my husband would tell you otherwise. But I think people, when they talk about themselves, you find out about them. I've placed more people in jobs who did not have the skill, but mm-hmm. they had the attitude and the personality.
Mm-hmm. How young were you when you first realized that you had some skill and assessing people?
I would say probably not until probably maybe 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. It took a long time, even though I knew I was doing it right because I had a lot of people finding jobs, right. helping them. Right. But it wasn't until just maybe the past couple of years, maybe having the baby, mm-hmm. but I feel more confident myself. Mm-hmm. I'm very comfortable with who I am. And I don't have anything to prove to anybody. I just want people around me who are great and mm-hmm. positive, and we want to work together.
What do you think changed that?
Having just the baby.
Yeah.
I really do. I think she, and people will say to me, she's really calmed you. You're not just a workaholic now. You're really, like, I know more about my employees now than I did before.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't so focused on, oh, what's the bottom line? Now I know who's having a baby or who's sick or things like that. So I think having her really changed me as mm-hmm. a woman and as a professional.
Mm-hmm. Has that improved the company?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
How so?
Same thing. Mm-hmm. My employees are more connected. I'm not, you know, like real personal with them, but mm-hmm. I'm more connected with them. And I know about them, and I think employees like when you know about them.
Yeah, I just had one quick question. With your 2-year-old daughter,
mm-hmm.
someday she's going to look back and say, "My mom." What do you want her to say about you?
I want her to say that I'm a strong woman. I'm tenacious. But I'm sympathetic, and I care about people, and that I truly want everyone to be happy. And however I can make that, I'll do it.
Your dad obviously knows, and your mom, about your success.
Yes.
Your stepmom. If they were here in the room, if your dad was here, what would he say about your success?
I think my dad would be proud of me. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one who really went in the professional world. All of my other family members are blue collar.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my dad would say that I always knew you'd do it.
Uh-huh. Great. And Therese, what's the website?
It's www.abbtech.com.
Great. Thank you. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. This is Colin Callahan, and this is your business spotlight. Can you tell us your name?
Hi, my name is Ed Tolchin.
And what company do you work with?
I work with Offutt Kerman, and we're a law firm located pretty much up and down the East Coast.
Uh-huh. And what's special about Offutt Kerman?
Well, Offutt Kerman is really a great place if you are a mid-market type firm
mm-hmm.
That needs hands-on legal services that can get you what you want at a price that you can afford.
Mm-hmm. So why do you enjoy your work?
I enjoy my work because I find it intellectually challenging. I get calls from very interesting people, very interesting clients all the time with problems that really need some thinking, and I like thinking and strategizing.
Uh-huh. What's most fun about that?
What's most fun about it?
About strategizing.
It's always new, always different, uh-huh. and it's unique. Uh-huh. A lot of lawyers can look up the law and tell you, well, the statute says X, Y, and Z. Well, what we do here is we look up the law. We tell you the statute says X, Y, and Z, and here's how you deal with that statute. Here's what you do in order to comply with that statute in a way that gets you what you need in your business.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. What is your perfect customer base? Who are you looking for?
Perfect customer is a customer in the in a mid-market type business, a lot of technology companies.
Mm-hmm.
We try to represent people who are entrepreneurs, who have great ideas because, as I said, they give us the most interesting problems to deal with.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like anybody who's looking for some strategy help is, we combined with legal is the right. Well, great. And what's the special sauce that's a little different than your competition?
You know what? I think what makes Offutt Kerman unique and different is that we provide Wall Street competence with Main Street accessibility.
Great. And what's your website?
www.offuttkerman.com. That's OFFITKURMAN.
Great. This is Colin Callahan, and this has been your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Colin Callahan, with my co-host, Mark Cohen. It's my pleasure now to introduce you to Vikram Manicotta, who is the President and CEO of Intelligent Automation. Welcome, Vikram. And what is Intelligent Automation?
Well, thank you for inviting me here. Intelligent Automation is a technology innovation company.
Mm-hmm.
We are a woman-owned small business. We were founded in 1987 by Jackie Haynes and Lenny Haynes. We have about 160 people. We focus on advanced technologies and research and development. Mm-hmm. Our customers are mostly the federal government, DOD, NASA, NIH, Department of Energy, mm-hmm. and our core areas of specialization range from cyber education and training, big data analytics, robotics, communications, and air traffic management. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. and how did you get a job with this company?
I graduated from the University of Maryland. Uh-huh. I left here in 1997. My first job was in Boston, and I met my wife while I was in Maryland. Mm-hmm. And we had what we call the two-body problem. And then I had some friends who were in this company who went to grad school with me, and I, you know, called them up, and you know, I got a job over here. It was mm-hmm. a very small company. I was about the 21st employee. Mm-hmm. I joined in 1999.
So you didn't come in as president and CEO?
No, I actually grew up the ranks. I joined as a scientist and then moved up, you know, director. I was the president in 2008, and I just became the CEO in mm-hmm. April.
So how young were you when you learned that you really liked to build things?
I would probably say middle school or something like that. Uh-huh. I realized I enjoy electronics and robotics. You know, in my house, we grew up, you know, we had rooms, so, and I always built things that would protect my room. I had an alarm system. I had different kinds of things. I always participated in the science fairs. I just liked building Lego, Meccano things.
So this was around middle school?
Yep, middle school,
yeah. Build that stuff, yeah. Mark?
I'm going to come back to being CEO. So you became CEO, but what is it that made you the best choice for CEO in the company?
You know, you should ask the board that question. I think, you know, if you ask me, I grew up in the company in many ways. I learned what the business model was, how to do business. And I think one of the skills I learned was, in addition to doing technical work, I was able to convince people that this is a great idea, mm-hmm. and they should, you know, give us some funding from the government to do this idea. Mm-hmm. Also, I think, you know, people relations, working with staff. I think some of the reasons.
A lot of times, people who are interested in building things are really interested in the things. But there's clearly a piece of you that you're interested in people, not just the thing.
Yeah, and that's an interesting question. I think over the years I began to realize that I was not just interested in building things, mm-hmm. but understanding what people wanted. And mm-hmm. I realized one of my strengths was how do I listen to somebody, what their technical problem was, and translate, you know, things that my colleagues or somebody else was doing. Mm-hmm. And trying to make something out of that and working with people who had the ideas.
Yeah.
And that led to relationships with customers and people.
Where do you think you learned that sense about people? How young were you when you had that piece of it?
I think that came pretty late. Mm-hmm. I think that came through a whole bunch of mentors that I had. I had great mentors in my personal life with my parents and my grandfather. Mm-hmm. And the mentoring I received at this company. This was only my second job.
Yeah.
So I think the owners were really great people, our prior CEO. I think that skill came pretty late as I began to interact more and more with people.
Right, right. Did you, what did you learn from your dad that shows up in your leadership style?
Actually, my dad had a very different philosophy than my mom. My mom was very focused on education. I grew up in India, and everybody was focused, and you got to go study. My dad always used to tell me, go have fun.
Uh-huh.
You know, you'll have a lot of things to worry about when you grow up. And when I was in college, he'd always tell me, go and have fun. Make uh-huh. sure you enjoy life. I think to this day, he keeps telling me, you got to enjoy life.
Yeah.
And that actually comes up in many ways in work, where the work environment that we have is all about how to have fun.
Yeah.
I think it's a candy shop for engineers.
Uh-huh.
And yes, we do that.
It sounds like that.
What does it look like to the visitor when they come to your shop?
It's a very interesting place. If you come in, depending on which day you come in, you might have a bunch of robots walking around the office. You know, we have the vacuum cleaner iRobot, Roomba robot setting up communications. We have two armed robots doing some manipulation. We have large simulations running that simulate the air traffic management in the national airspace.
Yeah, that really does sound like a candy shop for for engineers. Yes. But that fun quality is an interesting one to have brought, because, again, a lot of times the father is the one who's like, you know, hard work and nose to the grindstone, that kind of thing. But your mom... what did you learn from your mom that shows up in the leadership style?
Hard work and duty. I think my mom always said you've got to keep working hard, and that came from her family, my grandfather. Mm-hmm. And I think success is where really perseverance meets luck.
Yeah.
And you just got to keep working hard.
Yeah.
And that's really important.
You mentioned your grandparents as mentors as well. How did they influence you?
So my grandfather was very, very influential. I think we were a large, I only have a sister, a sibling, but my mother had four other siblings.
Uh-huh.
And the entire family met every summer in India, and my grandfather would actually tutor us and teach us about the next year's math and science and English.
Uh-huh.
And this was something we did all the way from, as far as I can remember, from when we were in sixth grade. All the cousins got together in one place. My grandmother had passed away, so it was a way to keep my granddad busy. And he educated all of us all the way till we went through 12th grade. He did this for, I think, 10 or 12 grandchildren.
So
he was a part of our life. You know, he passed away many years ago.
So there was kind of a family summer school.
Yes, it was a family summer school, and it shows. All my cousins are here in the United States. They're all, you know, working in different engineering or other professions.
Yeah.
Do you still have that meeting every summer?
Actually, yes, we have a family reunion. We try to do it every summer, but the next generation of people who are here, we do this every other summer, if not every summer. All the cousins get together, all their children get together, and we have a blast for 3 or 4 days.
And is your father teaching your children about math and science?
No, my father, I think he spends time having fun with his grandchildren.
Following his own advice. Yes.
Having fun. Is he here or back in India?
He's back in India. He's right now in Australia. My sister's actually in Australia, so he's spending time with his grandchildren in Australia.
Mm-hmm. Great. And so how is running your business like being the head of your family? Are there similarities?
There are in many ways. You know, I have two children, and being the head of the family is managing children. Managing my company is in many ways managing children, because we are a bunch of scientists and everybody wants to do something new every day. Everybody wants to invent something. And a part of my job is to decide, you know, which is the right direction to take the company
in.
Fortunately, I have a really great management team. Mm-hmm. The management team has been with the company for 15, 20 years. So the day-to-day operations are really easy. It's just making the decisions about what is the strategic directions, the tactical decisions that need to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And it's making choices, you know. It's like a family.
Yeah. Did you have other mentors along the way? You mentioned the owners of the company.
Yeah. My parents, my grandfather, and my dissertation advisor was also a great mentor. I graduated from the University of Maryland, the owners and the CEO, I think. And of course, my biggest sources of inspiration are my children and my wife. I have a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old, and watching them grow and learn and talk is the biggest source of inspiration.
Right. Do you have a builder in there?
Yep. My younger one is a builder. The older one's a thinker. The younger one, I'm told, is a lot like me. He's forever building robots, catapults, you know, breaking things. loves Lego camp. I enjoy doing things with him. It reminds me of my childhood.
Yeah,
yeah. So I'm curious about something. You're like a hot young scientist, eager to take on the world, really bright. And somewhere along the way, you got into management and learned how to be a good listener. What happened? What change happened to you that convinced you to be a good listener?
I'm told I'm still not a very good listener. and that's a change that I'm actually struggling to learn. You know, I'm a technology guy. I grew up, I don't know how to get my hands off technology. And that is actually a learning process. And the learning process came when I realized that just coming up and doing work is really not important. You have to listen to what your customer wants. So what is it that real problems are? It's not pushing your solution on their problem and making it work, but trying to find a solution for their problem. And in the end, when you're doing a business, that's what's important. You're trying to grow a business. Yeah. And I think that's beginning to sink in. It sank in a few years ago, mm-hmm. and it's still a challenge trying to do that.
Does it sometimes occur to you that the customer actually doesn't know or is able to articulate their real problem?
That happens a lot. It happens a lot, and I think a part of working with your customer is trying to help them articulate the problem, especially in research. If you're looking at something that is 5-10 years down the road, it's very difficult to articulate what you want. I think a part of what I do and what senior management at my company does is really working with our customers to articulate, to define the requirements and work, and they change. And I think yeah. being flexible and agile is the strength we have in our company. So,
so your dad's aware of your success.
I hope so.
And, and if he were here with us today, what would he say about you?
I think he'd be very proud of me, mm-hmm. and he'd still keep saying, make sure you have enough time to spend with your family and go have fun and have don't fun. Just keep focusing on work. I think that's what he would say.
Great. So what is the website address?
www.i-a-i.com.
Great. We've been speaking with Vikram Manikotip, who is the President and CEO of Intelligent Automation, and we will be back in a moment. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. And as I said, we'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
And your name is?
Dana Theus.
And the name of the organization?
InPowerCoaching.com.
And what does Empower Coaching do?
Well, we support mid-level to senior managers mm-hmm. and leaders mm-hmm. Achieve professional success by developing themselves personally.
Why does this turn you on so much?
Well, I have found in my own experience and my own leadership journey mm-hmm. that the better I was at being a good human being, the better mm-hmm. leader and the better business I ran and mm-hmm. the more successful I was. And I want to help other people do that.
So you're able to help the folks in an organization throughout the organization achieve what they're looking for, as well as help the organization move forward.
Well, to move an organization forward, mm-hmm. you've got to master the soft skills of mm-hmm. dealing with people effectively. Mm-hmm. You've got to learn to negotiate every relationship successfully mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. both parties. Mm-hmm. You have to communicate confidently. Mm-hmm. I support people and help them learn to develop those skills themselves to be strong mm-hmm. leaders.
And you have a specialty working with women?
I do work a lot with women. Mm-hmm. They're drawn to this work, but not mm-hmm. exclusively.
Mm-hmm. And to learn more about what you're up to, is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's InPowerCoaching.com.
Excellent. This has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Colin Callahan, with my co-host, Mark Cohen. And it's now my pleasure to introduce you to Shirley Clark, who is the CEO and Executive Director of the Women's Center. Welcome, Shirley.
Thank you for having me.
What is the Women's Center?
The Women's Center is a nonprofit, 40 years old actually as of this month, that wow. serves the community in a number of different ways. We have over 65 mental health therapists, mm-hmm. so we work with anything from career changes to anxiety to depression, and we also work with victims of violence, trauma. And we offer education programs as well. Mm-hmm. So, whether you're going through any kind of transition in life, we have usually a program mm-hmm. for it.
Mm-hmm. So this is a new role for you?
It's a new role for me. Mm-hmm. I have been volunteering with the Women's Center for about 8 years, mm-hmm. Was on the board of directors for a few years, and then stepped into this role as interim in December and, mm-hmm. and recently was made permanent. Uh-huh. So it was my pleasure and honor to serve here.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
So how young were you when you first realized that you had a certain passion or interest in helping?
I've been told I was 2. when my mother was in the hospital having my younger sister, my grandmother came to stay, and the story is that I ran around the house telling her, "Ma help, ma help." Mm-hmm. So apparently it's been something that's been with me my whole life.
And what are some other ways that it showed up as a kid? You said you're the middle child.
So. I am the middle child. I think that, I grew up on a farm, and I think that helping was just the way it had to be. Uh-huh. We we worked a lot to in order to put food on the table. It was part of what we did. Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about the circle of life, we experienced it there. And and everything we did was helping. And as I grew into my career, I realized every job that I was happy with, mm-hmm. I was somehow serving others. And whether that was waitressing in high school mm-hmm. or bartending in college, you know, it was just all of those different stages. I liked being with people and I liked hearing their stories.
So what's the sort of the short transition from farm to professional?
Short transition. It was actually
a short story.
It was. It wasn't a short story, actually. But you know, when you move away and you you start your life and you're going to school, you're meeting people, and you just start working. Mm-hmm. And as you work, you start to realize what you want. And all the changes, I made many changes in my career, but each change was towards something where I had an opportunity to be in what I would call a bigger space and impact more people. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a small town, and I like to be in areas where we can do the most good. Mm-hmm. And I watched that progression, and as I often worked with individuals, then I find the next step was, how do I serve more? How do I get to that next level and impact a greater number of people? Mm-hmm. And I've enjoyed that.
And where did you go to college?
A couple of places, mm-hmm. but I ended up here most recently at Georgetown. Mm-hmm. So I started in Michigan. I also, we lived in North Carolina for a while, and mm-hmm. I went to University of North Carolina, Charlotte. Mm-hmm.
So there's sort of a progression of small town farm to larger
yes.
and larger school
yes.
and
yes.
city. Yeah. What did you learn from your dad that shows up in your style today?
My dad is one of the most straightforward, honest people that I've ever met. Mm-hmm. And I never saw anybody who didn't react to him in a kind way. Uh-huh. And I never saw him react to anyone in an unkind way. And I think that his patience and his acceptance of life without looking for more is a grounding point.
Sure.
I think it's very easy to get caught up in the world and things, especially living mm-hmm. in the East, on the East Coast. But that, you know, I always go back to what's important in life, and his morals and values and faith have driven me through most of my career.
Mm-hmm. How about from your mom?
I would say the same thing. I mean, they've been married 63 years.
Wow.
And they are, you know, two of a kind in many ways, in that what's important they shared, and they shared with all five of their children.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to bring you back to maybe the business world. Mm-hmm. Are you also a therapist?
No, I'm not. I'm actually an executive coach by training and certification, but I'm not a therapist. But the coaching really, really put me into a position to study how the brain works. And so being at the center, it's been fascinating to work with the therapist and hear their stories and talk about their journeys with them.
So I'm curious, what is it that makes it work for you to manage 63 therapists? It's got to be a daunting position.
Well, you know, a lot of it at the Women's Center is about community service. And so I don't manage the therapist. We have a clinical director, Dr. Janet Kimberling, who does that. What I manage is the operations, the cash flow, the educational programs, the direction, the strategy, the relationships in the community. Mm-hmm. You know, so I look at how do we take what we have built and serve the community most effectively with the money that's entrusted to us.
And it's called the Women's Center, but mm-hmm. do you only work with women?
No, we work with women, men, children, teens, adults. You know, it started as a resource for women at a time in the 70s when there was no place for some of these women to go to get mm-hmm. help.
Right.
And over the years, it's continued to morph. And we are actually looking at how do we tagline our name mm-hmm. or how do we, you know, we don't want to change who we are, but we want to make sure people know that we're available for anybody.
Right, it's a community resource.
Yeah.
What's the big message this year that you're trying to get out to the community?
I think a lot of what we're focused on is letting people know that mental health is a good thing. It's health. It's a happy word. Mental illness is something else, and that the stigma associated often with mental illness has crept over and stopped many people from seeking the exercise of their mind, so to speak, that mm-hmm. they need in order to enjoy mental health. As right. I always say, you go to the gym to be physically healthy or you eat right, and that's great. But if you have an illness, you go to the doctor. If you have a cold, you might go to the doctor, but there's no stigma between the differences. Mm-hmm. Here, you know, we do have many people suffering from mental illness and disorders physically of the brain. And we have a number of people just going through transitions in life who just need some tools and resources or somebody to talk it out with to practice behaviors that help them become right. resilient. Mm-hmm. So the message is, resilience and mental health are the same thing, and there is no stigma or shame in seeking some help in those areas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting. I know, Colin, you're a coach, yep. and I obviously have a lot of friends who are coaches having gone through programs, but it's fine for people to get a coach but not a counselor. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, there's a little bit of a difference, but yep. we're all here for the same thing, is to help people be their best.
Right, right, and build that resilience.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems like an important message to help folks realize, or the world realize, that that it's a combined piece. It's not yeah. our minds yeah. and bodies aren't separate, but yeah. that health is really healthcare run.
Right.
Round.
Yeah, so we're really focused on teens this year because we think if we can get to people early, maybe then for life they'll start to have better practices. So we're really doing an outreach in that area.
So before you started volunteering and then working more closely with the Women's Center, you were doing something else. What
yeah.
was that?
So, all right, so I stopped working in the corporate world in 2003. And to spend more time with my kids. I was mm-hmm. on airplanes and never saw them very often. And so through that transition, I always wanted to do something to help women in the workplace, because I saw, especially when I worked in the South in banking, mm-hmm. I saw so many decisions being made, you know, on the golf course or mm-hmm. duck hunting or something. And uh-huh. I said, we need to do something about that. Well, it continued to transform. So I started a nonprofit, and then I started consulting. And one thing led to another, and I was self-employed doing a number of things over the years. And the last few were focused really around leadership work mm-hmm. and around critical thinking. And I developed programs on that, and it was a real pleasure that yeah. kind of led me down the path.
When you, I'm curious, when you were young, what were your parents doing that helped you understand that community service was important?
You know, my mother was always one of those people who did the Meals on Wheels, mm-hmm. and we visited people in nursing homes, and she was always one to take her little choir that she started and go around and sing for the elderly. Just, mm-hmm. and I never thought much about it at the time. It was just the way of life. Mm-hmm. But she always did that. And yeah, I think there's always an impression being made.
Right,
yeah,
right. So yeah. you kind of go along with it and have a sense of, and it builds in. Because there's clearly a sense that as you made your decisions, even through corporate and that sort of thing, that your desire to help make things better in the community was really the driver, and now here you are in this role.
Yeah. It was interesting. Once I was being coached, and my coach said, you keep saying you want to help. What does that mean? And I said, I don't know what that means. You know, so you're asking me to define it. It just is, how do you make the world around you better? Mm-hmm. How do you give people some of the joy that I've been blessed with?
Yeah. What's the website for the Women's Center?
It's www.thewomenscenter.org.
.org. Great. Thank you. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We've been speaking now with Shirley Clark, who is the CEO and executive director of the Women's Center. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. Welcome, Jody. Jody, what is Acumetrics?
Acumetrics is a firm that works with CEOs that are interested in growing their revenues and bottom lines in a scalable, sustainable way.
And what's your role within the company?
I'm the founder and president.
And what is it about the job that you bring that's so unique to you, that special gift, as we say?
That special gift? I enjoy working with the CEOs to have them achieve goals that they thought were impossible.
And what is it about the organization that makes it so special?
Our clients say that it's the three P's: our people, our platform, and our processes. Our people are highly qualified and they're fun to work with. Mm-hmm. Our processes are enabling of reliable and timely financial information, and our platform is scalable.
And who is, or what is perhaps, the perfect client for you?
Businesses of any size that want reliable, timely financial information.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I enjoy working with the clients and making a difference. We like to help the CEOs understand their financial information so they can make different choices tomorrow to impact future results of the business.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.acumetricsllc.com.
Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Les.
We've been speaking with Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Colin Callahan, with my co-host, Mark Cohen. And it's now my pleasure to introduce to you Ashish Coate, who is the founder and CEO of Technomile. Welcome, Ashish.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What is Technomile?
So Technomile is a cloud consulting firm where we help organizations not only migrate to cloud their technology infrastructure, but also helps them integrate with their cloud infrastructure with their on-premise infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So a lot of businesses are migrating onto cloud and they don't know how to get there, and they don't know how to get the maximum ROI from that. Mm-hmm. So that's where we come in, and that's where we help them.
That's the piece you do. And you've said now you're 60 people.
Yes.
So that's grown. And you started this company.
Yes, I did.
About 4 years ago.
Yeah.
What in the world possessed you to start a company?
Obviously, being in the technology space for many years, I was exposed to a lot of great new things and had the opportunity to learn a lot of cutting-edge technologies. And when the whole financial turmoil happened, mm-hmm. in 2008, 2009, a lot of people's thinking kind of changed, where they started thinking lean infrastructure, mm-hmm. and they started thinking the cloud technologies. And I had the opportunity to work on a lot of those technologies. So mm-hmm. a lot of folks came to me and said they needed help from me, and that's when I thought that I can't help everybody by myself, and I need to put together a group of people who can help all of these organizations. Mm-hmm. And that's how I started.
Did you have a lot of business experience?
I had the pleasure to work with a lot of small companies, mm-hmm. and a lot of entrepreneur folks in my life.
So I had mentoring
from those. I worked with a lot of folks who started companies from nothing, raised millions of dollars. So being with them and understanding what it takes to build a company helped me realize, mm-hmm. My vision.
Yeah. Did you? What was your biggest surprise when you started the company and said, "Okay, now it's a real company. Here I am. I'm in charge of it." What was the biggest surprise?
One of the biggest surprise and I believe that's what a lot of people face, is there is never a dearth of things that you can't do. Mm-hmm. There is always something to do when you are running a company.
Yeah.
You can do sales, you can do marketing, you can do the business development, but then you have to always manage your personal life along with your career ambitions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then at what point do you stop being a business owner and being a business person, and then what time do you start being a personal life, and how do you nurture your relationships with your family?
So how did you approach that?
I have a wonderful family, mm-hmm. My wife and two kids. So when you look at them, you realize that there is more to the life than just working.
Uh-huh.
And that's they sort of remind you that you need to spend time with family.
Uh-huh.
And that's what sort of encourages me to find those balances in life.
Yeah. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in India, in a small city called Nagpur.
Mm-hmm.
And my childhood was spent there, and then I moved to Bombay to do my college education, mm-hmm. and then I moved here.
And do you had any brothers and sisters growing up?
I have one elder brother, but I grew up in what we call joint family, where my father and his brother, we lived together, so we were total five siblings,
right.
who we all grew up together.
So with your cousins.
Correct, yeah. With my cousins.
What did your mom and dad do?
So my dad was the biggest influencer on me, and he was working for the Indian government, and my mom did everything else. So.
And how was your dad an influence to you? What way?
My dad always taught me to work hard and raise the family in a way that your family's financially, morally, ethically is beyond where I was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the family, generations after generation, has to sort of work hard and evolve them, take them to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the sort of values that help me keep going.
So I'm curious, you mentioned that in the green room as well, and do you ever feel somewhat constrained by that approach, like you have to do this? I mean, is there anybody in your family that said, no, I'm going to go do my own thing and not feel like I have to make things better for the next generation?
I don't think it's constrained any one of us. My brother, who lives in China, and he migrated from India to China with the same desire. My cousin, he has his own business. So we all find motivation from that thinking. It doesn't necessarily constrain us.
Right.
So, and are you going to expect the same of your children?
I don't know if the same. I would preach the similar values that they need to work hard. I would be glad if they can do that. But I don't think that's necessarily doesn't need to be a burden on them. They should use that as a motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So family really was a core value growing up, especially
yes.
in a combined extended family.
Yeah.
That was always a place to come back to.
Yeah, family was always a place to come back to. My wife and my kids and my mom, my brothers, they're big influencers, my cousins, they all... The success doesn't come to anybody by just working alone.
Yeah.
There are several folks who sort of help you grow.
Mm-hmm.
And in my case, it's been the family and friends who have all helped in my success.
Yeah. So what's the core thing you learned from your dad that shows up in your day-to-day work in addition to the family, the value of the family?
I think hard work.
Uh-huh.
My dad always told me that there are certain individuals who are gifted.
Mm-hmm.
Like we see a lot of individuals who are gifted, like Tiger Woods and LeBron James, who are gifted in a particular sports.
Mm-hmm.
Or there are a lot of technology individuals that we see that they're gifted, like Mark Zuckerberg of the world,
mm-hmm.
who sort of invented things at a very early stage.
Mm-hmm.
But for majority of the rest of the people, it's a lot about doing hard work.
Mm-hmm.
There's no shortcut to hard work. And my father taught us to continue to learn. The education never stops,
mm-hmm.
even though you got your degree. So keep learning. And in technology, that is really very important,
yeah.
because it sort of evolves so rapidly.
Right, and it changes
yeah.
quickly. So really the value of the family and the hard work is what created your platform to be able to take the courageous step of starting a company.
Yes,
yeah.
yes it did.
Yeah. What did you learn from your mom that shows up in your leadership style?
My mom is very, she is a very religious person,
mm-hmm.
And she sort of keeps telling me that you don't have to be obsessed with success, and you don't have to keep working so hard and miss out on the moments that are important to you. Right. That's my mom keeps telling, and my wife also keeps reminding me that that you don't have to work. I mean, as a small business and as anyone who is involved and who's passionate, sometimes it's difficult to find balance. And my mom sort of keeps encouraging me to think beyond just work.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm curious, you were working for others in startups.
Yeah.
Up until a point, you had an idea and said, you know what, rather than suggest that my boss take this on, I'm going to set up my own company and do it. How did that happen? What changed with you?
As you know, the financial turmoil, I used to work for a company, and there were challenges with the company during the 2008 financial turmoil. And then I always was facing that dilemma. I used to work for a company back, for an airline company back in 2000, and September 11th happened. And I had challenges in my career, and I always felt that my life is really stuck by these conditions or factors that are beyond my control. Mm-hmm. And then I really need to take charge of my own career, my own life. And some of these events that happened with me that sort of shaped my life, and then my wife encouraged me to sort of say, forget about working for others. It's time for you to take that leap. And you have what it takes to do it, and that sort of encouraged me to do that.
So she encouraged you, you agreed, and you never looked back.
No. I mean, it's been wonderful to have colleagues and coworkers, management team that has helped us succeed. There's a lot of hard work of not just me, but people who work with us.
Right.
It's always a team success, and I was fortunate to have good folks in our team. We've grown, we've expanded into different cities.
So how is owning a business like having a family?
I think you have this parallel universe.
Yeah.
Your business, you're emotionally attached to it, and your family as well. There are constantly pulls from family as well as business, and it's a struggle that everybody goes through who have a business. It's almost like these two universes that sometimes collide with each other, and it's a challenge that you have to sort of evolve. But I think if you keep your priorities right, and if you have a clear definition of success, then I think you can manage both.
Great.
It's not impossible.
So, Ashish, what is the website?
Our website is technomile.com.
Great. We've been speaking with Ashish Coat, co-founder and CEO of Technomile. We had a great list of guests today, and they included Therese Baker, president of Abtech Professional Resources, Vikram Manikota, who is the president and CEO of Intelligent Automation, Shirley Clark, who is the CEO and executive director of of the Women's Center, and then I'm jumping to Ashish, who was our last guest here, as I said, who's the founder and CEO of Technomile. I'd like to thank my co-host, Mark Cohen, for helping develop our storyline and hopefully delivering a great listening experience for the audience, entertaining show. And I'd also like to thank you, the listening audience, for otherwise we wouldn't have a radio show at all. And finally, thank you to Offit Corman, the law offices here who have hosted us today. Don't forget to visit our website, Executive Leaders Radio, to learn more about our executive leaders. And you can hear this show again at businesstalkradio.net. Tune in again next week. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and Federal News Radio. This paid